Vatican and World News.
Today, Thursday in the sixth week of Easter, is the solemnity of the Ascension of our Lord. And these are today's headlines. 7 people have died and 21 more are missing after a turbo collided with another vessel in Hungary. A human rights group has accused Myanmar's military of committing new atrocities in Rakhine State. And Pope Francis has sent a message to participants in the 17th International Liturgical Conference, taking place at the Bozzè Monastery in Italy. In the Vatican, I'm Christopher Wells. Our top story today, 7 South Korean tourists have died and another 21 people are still missing after a boat sank following a collision on the Danube River in Budapest, Hungary. Lady O'Kane has this report.
Rescue workers combed the Danube River in Budapest Thursday for people still missing after a sightseeing boat carrying South Korean tourists sank after colliding with a larger cruise ship during an evening of rain. A number of people were confirmed dead and others were rescued. The South Korea-based Very Good Tour Agency, which organized the trip, said the boat had been on its way back after a night tour on Wednesday evening when the accident happened. The boat sank near the Margit Bridge, not far from the Parliament building in central Budapest. The tour party was made up of 30 tourists, 2 guides and a photographer on a package tour of Europe. A number of people are still missing. Gabor Sato of the Hungarian National Ambulance Service spoke of the ongoing operation. "We are looking for passengers on water and ashore," he said. Rescue operations were being hampered by rain and the fast flow of the rising Danube as dozens of rescue personnel continued the race against time to find survivors. Employees from the South Korean embassy in Budapest were assisting Hungarian officials in identifying those rescued and the deceased. South Korean President Moon Jae-in instructed officials to employ all available resources to support the rescue efforts in Hungary. Hungarian police have launched a criminal investigation into the incident. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Elsewhere, a leading human rights group is accusing Myanmar's military of committing new atrocities in northwestern Rakhine State, where it conducted a brutal crackdown against Rohingya Muslims less than 2 years ago. Sister Carmelan has this report.
A new report released by Amnesty International lists numerous war crimes allegedly carried out by Myanmar troops. These include extrajudicial killings, arbitrary arrests, torture, and enforced disappearances. It comes as the military has deployed thousands of troops to Rakhine State to battle the Arakan Army rebel group, which is seeking greater autonomy for the state's ethnic Buddhists. The report drawn up by Amnesty's Regional Director for East and Southeast Asia says the military's latest operations in Rakhine show an unrepentant, unreformed and unaccountable military that is terrorizing civilians. But it also accused the Arakan Army Group of committing abuses against civilians. More than 700,000 Rohingya Muslims were forced to flee Rakhine State into neighboring Bangladesh after Myanmar's military launched a bloody campaign in August 2017 in response to attacks on state security posts by Rohingya militants. Numerous survivor accounts of murder, rape, and arson led the United Nations to accuse Myanmar's military of genocidal intent. The majority Buddhist country considers the Rohingyas as illegal immigrants from Bangladesh and have denied them citizenship and other basic rights. I'm Sister Kamalan.
In Africa, the newly appointed UN Ebola Response Chief in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the DRC, has promised to listen more to the fears and concerns of local people in a bid to end what he called frequent interruptions, hampering the fight against the deadly virus. More than 1,280 people have died in the country's worst ever outbreak, and response coordinator David Gressley is heading to the epicenter, Butembo, to work closely with partners and local leaders to finally contain the outbreak. In an interview given to UN Radio, Grassley, who is also deputy head of the UN Stabilization Mission in the DRC, MONUSCO, says violence by numerous armed groups, protests and demonstrations, together with political mistrust, had severely affected the government and World Health Organization-led response to the virus.
It's a very serious situation on the ground. We're quite worried about the situation. It has continued for now 10 months in terms of the response, but the epidemic has been circulating for over a year now. And one of the key problems that we've seen on the ground is that there have been frequent interruptions in the response, which gives the virus a chance to multiply. And usually 10 to days to 2 weeks later, we see a sharp increase after these interruptions due to sometimes protests, sometimes attacks, physical attacks, and demonstrations, a variety of things that have disrupted the response. And it's important to understand why the attacks are happening, why the protests are happening, etc., so that we can find a way to sustain the response in a way that it's not interrupted, and so that we can bring it to a close. The virus doesn't care. We cannot just use a technical approach to the response. WHO, Ministry of Health in particular, have the skills for that. They have the means on the ground for that. But it's not enough by itself. And you need a larger response that deals with the issues that I've described of security and resistance if you're going to finally put an end to this epidemic.
That was David Grassley, UN Ebola Response Chief in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. He was speaking with UN Radio. Israel today embarked on an unprecedented snap election campaign. As Linda Bardoni reports, it's the second this year after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu failed to form a governing coalition and instead dramatically dissolved parliament.
In what appeared to be a totally improbable scenario just days ago, Israel's newly elected Knesset dissolved itself in the early morning with a 74-45 vote and set a new election date for September the 17th. The parliament's disbanding comes just a month after it was sworn in and sets the stage for a second election in the same year. It's a first in Israeli history. The developments represent a dramatic setback for longtime leader Netanyahu, who had appeared to secure a comfortable win in last month's vote. What happened was that his traditional ally, Avigdor Lieberman, refused to bring his faction into the coalition, dealing a lethal blow to Netanyahu's parliamentary majority. Lieberman, a veteran nationalist, demanded that current legislation mandating that young ultra-Orthodox men be drafted into the military run its course. Years of exemptions for ultra-Orthodox men have generated widespread resentment among the rest of Jewish Israelis who serve. Thus, the ultra-Orthodox, backed by Netanyahu, refused to bend, and the showdown quickly devolved into a full-blown crisis that imploded the prospective government. Netanyahu, in the absence of immunity, will now have to face a pre-indictment hearing before criminal charges are expected to be filed against him in a series of corruption cases. The new election gives the anti-Netanyahu forces, led by blue and white leader Benny Gantz, another shot at toppling the longtime leader. It also complicates Netanyahu's efforts to pass the proposed bills to protect himself from prosecution. The political uncertainty could also spell troubles for the White House's Mideast peace efforts, which foresee an initiative aimed at drawing investment into the Palestinian territories. I'm Linda Bordoni.
Pope Francis has sent a message to participants attending the 17th International Liturgical Conference, which is taking place at the Monastery of Beauzée. The conference, entitled Altar, Recent Acquisitions and New Problems, opens today on Thursday. The conference is being organized by the Beauzée Monastery in northern Italy, along with the National Office for Ecclesiastical Cultural Heritage of the Italian Episcopal Conference, in collaboration with the National Council of Architects. The altar was the theme of the International Liturgical Conference in Beauce in 2003, and the symposium is returning to this subject to present the latest results of historical studies in the past 15 years, as well as discussing new questions that have arisen. Marking the opening of the event, Pope Francis sent a message signed by Vatican Secretary of State Colonel Pietro Parolin. In his message, the Pope sends his greetings to the participants and expresses the hope that reflections during the symposium will lead to a more mature understanding of the liturgy as the source and summit of an ecclesial and personal life full of fraternity. Finally, the Centesimus Annus Foundation on yesterday, awarded the Economy and Society International Prize to Dr. Mary Hirschfeld, a professor at Villanova University in the United States. She received the prize for her book, Aquinas and the Market, Toward a Humane Economy. The award is given to a work which stands out for its original contribution to in-depth study and implementation of the social doctrine of the Church. The Centesimus Annus Foundation said Dr. Hirschfeld's book offers a fascinating dialogue between the world of economics and the world of faith. Dr. Hirschfeld spoke with Vatican News about how her conversion to Catholicism influenced her work.
So, yes, I'm a convert. I was just a secular agnostic, spiritual seeking type, but definitely averse to organized religion and certainly averse to Christianity. Catholicism was like, I never would have expected to be here in a million years. God in his mercy just converted me. Just out of the blue. It was an out of the blue conversion. And it was a tremendous gift. I converted at the age of 38. So for the first 37 years, I'm trying to find happiness and peace in this life. And I just can't. It's all frustrating. I can't get rich enough to satisfy my needs. And I can't get prestigious enough with my work to satisfy my ego needs. And there's just this restlessness. So anyway, the conversion was profound. I really was given a lot of consolations and spiritual, you know, I just fell in love with God and realized that's actually the source of happiness. But for me, the real miracle after that was once I had this big conversion is seeing the world in light of God and seeing the real goods of the world really as for the first time. And so then the book has been about how do I articulate this vision of what the good life really is. And the good life really is trying to develop better relationships with people and appreciating all these human connections. How do I bring that into contact with what I've learned as an economist, which is about maximizing my utility? And so the book is a product of how do I bring these two things together. So the vision of happiness I get from Aquinas, and then I try to keep the economist principles about how do markets work and bring them together. And then the book offers a vision of what a humane economy would look like. It's a truly beautiful one, by the way. If you really work it out, it's just beautiful. But then it also has resources to say, well, we don't live in that world. We probably aren't going to live in that world anytime soon. So pragmatically, how should we think about things such that we keep in mind where we would like to go?
That was Dr. Mary Hirschfeld, author of Aquinas and the